Welcome to Keep the Hotel Empty. Today we've kept the hotel empty for the spreader of love, the drummer of drums, and an all-around wonderful human being. Welcome back for part two, Brandon Thrift. Brandon, welcome.
Thank you, brother.
And for those that have been here from the jump, we'll remember Brandon from episode two. That was when we were filming with two GoPros and an iPhone. And it's what we affectionately refer to as the blue episode because you can't see anything but blue. And we're all just blued out beyond belief. So now we got you in the new digs. We can do some things proper. And it's been probably almost exactly a year since we've seen you, since we did episode two. So welcome back, my friend.
Dude, thank you for having me again. I mean, the transformation, like we were just talking about, is incredible to see. There's still a little bit of blue, which is nice.
Yeah. We got to keep some blue, but it's not just blown out. You were a little bit smurfified in the last one.
Dude, we were hidden. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. And we didn't have Seth. Wasn't here yet. That was one of the ones that was flying totally solo. So, you know, I appreciate you helping me get off the ground by being a guest out the gate. And I'm very happy to have you back now that Seth is in the fold and we've grown so much.
I'm here to support, bro. I love to see it.
Well, that's why we're here. So let's kind of recap a little bit in the last year. When we last left off, you were just starting to get finished with the Fiends record. You were just starting to do some murals. So let's pick the painting lane first. Talk to me about what it's been like in the last year. It's been, we've spread, pun intended, beyond spread love.
Dude, honestly, looking back, I've been thinking about this the past couple months, like recapping, reassessing everything. And like this past year has been like the most integral as far as growing and like really expanding out of what I've been doing. I feel like I've done the most work this past year than I've done combined in the past 4 years. Does that make sense? Like I'm just hitting the ground running and I feel like I've gained some proper traction with like how I want to approach everything, how I want to do everything. It's just like, I feel very, very, very second nature at this point.
What do you think were some of the things that started to click that gave you that feeling that hadn't been the case in the last few years leading up to that?
I think just like, I don't want to say growing pains, but like it was all fresh to me. Like it was all new to me. And I think I've cultivated a sense of like more proper confidence in the past year. Like I've pushed a lot of negative stuff out of my life. Like I've really honed in on focusing on like what serves me now, you know, from a very minimalist standpoint. Like I keep everything in my life very streamlined. Like I love a routine, you know. Things like that, like sticking to a schedule, sticking to a routine.
I think that's a new thing.
In a less chaotic way,
yeah.
Kind of, you know? Because back in the day, in the past couple of years when I was first starting, it was like, okay, well, I just want to grind. And as I'm grinding, like try to learn as much as I can. It was a very weird like double down cycle of like constantly trying to progress myself, but also trying to get gigs and like work.
One catching up to the other all the time.
100%. And so now it's like I feel confident in a certain skill sets to the point where like I know what I can do. I know what I'm confident in. Like I know what I'm capable of. But I'm also definitely still trying to like grow and learn and everything. But
right.
That's just completely shifted in the past year, I feel.
So what were some of the first projects that you thought were giving you that feeling, that liberated feeling like now I'm sort of working in lockstep, my input and output?
Sounds silly, but like the most recent ones, and it's always moving forward as like we progress into the future, like the most recent projects, it just keeps enhancing that confidence and keeps enhancing like the reassurance that I need to like feel like I'm on the right path, you know?
So when you started, well, I mean, when we last spoke, you were just starting to do more murals, and that was talking about adding in another skill set. So talk to me what that's been like, learning the skill set, not necessarily even just learning how to be an artist, but now learning another way to express yourself artistically.
I love large scale stuff, large scale projects. And I've done a couple of like my biggest projects so far in terms of scale.
Right.
Some people can be pretty intimidated by them, but I love the idea of working large scale. It's just how I roll. Like I'm very like expressive and bombastic and dangly and gangly as a person. So like expressing and painting on a wall like that just feels right. But like I was saying, like there's been a couple like the larger projects I've done. Those have been points where I'm like, oh, this is bigger than what I'm used to. I got to reassess and reevaluate my approach. which is a nice kind of like a nudge, like, hey, like you're growing, or like, hey, you got to focus on this. Like, hey, kind of shift things up a little bit.
What parts of your approach do you think you had to change?
Definitely like supplies. Cause I use primarily spray paint, right?
Yeah.
And so I'll think, you know, relating back to previous projects or something, I'll say, oh, it took this, a lot of the amount of cans, oh, this much paint, whatever, to cover this area, fine. Like, I'm kind of used to that. But, like, again, with the larger scale stuff, I'm like, oh, shit, like, I need a lot more paint for this. Like, I didn't have this, like, mentally prepared this time. So, like, little things like that.
So what was the first, what was the first big thing you did when you felt like, okay, when you had that first, like, okay, wait a minute, I need to up all of the thinking I've done?
I mean, to be honest, it's been like every large scale project or like large mural that I've done, to be honest, because they're all different. You know, it'll be a different different piece of artwork, which, you know, yields different results in terms of like the types of paint you need, the quantity of paint you need. So like each one's its own individual learning process, if that makes sense.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, some of that, now that you've gone onto these bigger canvases and things, you've spread out on what you're painting. Talk to me a little bit about your transition from the Spread Love into some of the things you're doing now and the way you've incorporated the two.
That's a good question. First off, outside of like the Spread Love concept that I've been doing, it's all been like saying yes to a challenge. You know, I've never approached anybody to be like, hey, like, let me paint your wall. Like, please. It's always been people coming to me, which is blows my mind. But always saying yes to those things. Like, somebody's like, hey, can you come paint a lion? Like, recently someone's like, hey, can you come paint a lion in our gym? We're converting, you know, to a gym. And that's something I've never done before. That's so out of my comfort zone, so out of my wheelhouse. But like, I said yes, and I challenged myself, you know, with the application and trying different things and different techniques and whatever. And it came out really good.
So what's square one of that? What's square one of taking on a project that you don't have any experience with?
Step one is saying yes. Step one is saying, yeah,
good point.
You know,
good point.
Step one is saying, yes, I accept this challenge. And then you figure it out. Like a lot of research, it'll be like, okay, I'm going to sit down and study, like figure out which lion style I want, the shape, the contour, you know, if I want like a symmetry, like a symmetrical face, if I want something kind of super abstract, colors, whatever, but kind of keep it in my wheelhouse of technique. And like,
which is what? What would you say your wheelhouse of technique is?
I mean, intermediate, I guess. Like, still very beginner in my own mind. You know?
Well, yeah.
It's all fresh to me. It's all new to me. I'm not amazing by any stretch of the definition.
No, but when you see things and you're going to, for want of a better way of putting it, you're going to want to think about how you can stylize it for you.
Yeah.
You know, you find the lion that you think looks good, but you got to stylize this for you. What are some of the things you think about when that's the thought process? What's stylized as you? Maybe not necessarily what's your wheelhouse, but mm-hmm. what are some of the things you do that make it feel like this lion looks like you did it now?
Oh, dude, that's a good question. I think if, as an artist, as a creator, if you just stick true to what feels right for you, it'll come out looking like you did it, if that makes sense. Like, somebody will see that and be like, oh, I can tell that's you. I can tell that's your style based on a feeling or an emotion that the art portrays, that they receive, that they've seen in past artworks you've done.
Mm.
It's almost invisible, kind of, but you can recognize somebody based on their style or like the way that they will do their strokes or the way that they'll do their fills or like the tightness of their edges or lines or whatever. There's a certain underlying like subconscious style to like the true creative process of an individual.
What do you think is the best way to not compromise that? Is it just a matter of not trying too hard, not thinking too much?
Plagiarism, I think, is a big one. Like, if I just being true to you, like if you're true to you and listening to yourself and you're very in tune with who you are, you'll know what's right and you'll know what's like, oh, that's not me. Like, oh, that didn't feel right. Or, oh, that just doesn't look like me.
Well, tell me about a time you've had that. So, because I'm kind of curious how one quantifies that in real time.
I guess it's all individualized. But like, for example, like painting over canvases.
Yeah, right.
Like canvas work. There's been a couple projects I've done on canvas where I've like maybe tried something new or like have gotten inspiration from a piece. And I was like, maybe I'll try to not replicate it, but like gain inspiration from it. And I'll do it. And I'm just like, that's not me. And I'll cover it up and then I'll try something else or whatever. And it's just like, that's not me. That doesn't feel right. So I just don't feel like I'm honoring my true craft. Like I'm not being true to myself. And it's just not a good feeling.
But you have to allow yourself the space to create the piece to know whether or not you're going to resonate with it.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. There's a dance. Like you got to stand on the ledge and you got to jump sometimes. And sometimes you land on your face, bro. But like that's how you learn, you know?
Right.
Narrowing it down into what is going to be your style or is your style or is true to you. It's like you're taking all these opportunities, these challenges and jumping off all these cliffs, but you're learning what you don't want. You're closing those doors and it's getting you further to your narrowed path of
what resonates with you.
What resonates with you, yeah.
Okay, so how did that start to work with you? I've noticed some of the things that you have almost like a pop art thing to it, and mm-hmm. some of the things I see them as distinctly Brandon, you know. So how was that for you as you started to see some of these things maybe that you didn't want to do come into more focus as to what you do want to do?
I guess just saying no, like knowing when to say no to certain things and like really honing in on certain things. Like I've been really obsessed with this comic book style. And it's been compared to like old Lichtenstein or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
It's reminiscent of certain things because that's what I've gained the inspiration from. It's like paying an ode to them, but keeping it familial with like my own individual style, like with like the bubble love or like the spread love that I have.
Right.
Or like these characters that I've introduced now. I've been obsessed with like these side profiles of like these old Lichtenstein inspired comic book style women. And I'm trying to implement them because it's so hard. You know, how are you going to make your own individual character without biting off somebody else's style? It's kind of like rinse and repeat to an extent, like the cycle continues, but
yeah,
to an extent.
Well, there is nothing new under the sun to an extent.
To an extent, no, right? There's not. Same thing can go with music. It's just like you're gaining the inspiration. You're kind of stealing, which is what you're supposed to do as an artist. And making it your own. Not stealing and plagiarizing, but garnering inspiration from.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's such a weird subjective thing as well. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. When you can draw, and the parallel is easy to make with you because you're a musician as well, but the same thing could happen in music. You know, it's to one person, it sounds just like X. To another person, it looks just like X. And to the person next in line, it doesn't have any similarities at all. So how do you do it?
I mean, bro, in the mainstream, like music, for example, in the mainstream and like the mad consumable force field that is the music, like the popular music area, like you're limited, like to a pop song, to like a catchy chorusy rock song, you're limited to like your certain chords, your structures, like the notes you get to pick. It's very limited as opposed to like if you're playing in Animals as Leaders or if you're playing in like some crazy slam band,
right?
Like slam tech death metal band, like. You're very limited to your options if you want to make something that – if you want to make something that like you're hoping to be like popular or
well-consumed
by the masses.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, so in the music world, you know, if you're one of these types of subgenres or whatever, if you deviate too much from the script, then you cease to be that subgenre anymore and now you got to find a new camp, okay?
Sure.
How do you feel about that in your visual art? And me, maybe it's my own naivety or what are my frame of reference when I see the things that you're doing with like these female side profiles and stuff, it smacks of me of like a pop art thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? How do you navigate that stuff when you're making your visual art? Or do you find that you can think of it less in that, okay, if I do pop art elements, it doesn't matter if I cease to be pop art because I can still exist in a different abstract lane. Now, you know what I mean? It's not so tribal as music, or do you find that it is?
I definitely one in the same for sure. Definitely both like very cathartic means of expression. But try just to not be so hard on yourself, I guess. That's something I'm learning, bro. Like, growing into the art scene and growing into the music scene, I was so just like militant about everything. Like, oh, it has to be perfect. Which, what does that mean?
And you decide,
I guess. And what does it matter, you know? But to an extent, like that kind of helped cultivate me and chisel my like artistic viewpoint into what it is today. I'm still so much like that, but like kind of remove the like self-deprecating like aspects of it, you know? Like, oh, you suck. Oh, you're terrible. What are you doing? Stop. You
yeah.
suck.
Yeah.
And like just be like, dude, it's okay to fuck up.
Right?
Like it's okay. And if I don't know. Like it's so okay to fuck up, like just learn from it.
Right.
And laugh at it. And accept that like you messed up, like and just move on.
Well, you've been able to do that with some extreme grace. And I, of course, I'm inspired by watching that part. But how conscious of it are you when you're making your visual art? If you're thinking to yourself, you know, am I making pop art? Am I making psychedelia? Am I making something that throws back to this comic book thing? I guess the reason why I'm trying to drive at this is because when you're making Fiend songs, you know what you're making. You know what that is. You know who that appeals to. When you're drumming with Cold Steel, you know where that's going. You know what that is and who it's for.
Yeah.
When you're making visual art, you have inherently way less of an idea of that because it's in so much more subjective. Mm-hmm. Do you ever think to yourself, the only way I can make this analogous, am I painting a picture? Am I writing a song that is for somebody? Where is my lane in this? Am I making pop art? Do you think about that at all? Or is it just like, man, I'm making whatever feels good and it'll find its lane?
That's a really good question. That's another thing I've kind of been reassessing. If you force any sort of creative process, if you say, oh, I'm going to make this for this person, it 10 out of 10 times will never work.
Right.
And another thing I've been thinking of recently is I have a lot of hair and it's everywhere. You have to serve the purpose of the individual piece that you're creating, whether that be a song, whether that be a piece of art. It's its own individualized entity,
right,
at a certain extent upon creation. It becomes a thing as you're making it, as you're creating it, and you'll hear and feel certain different things that like lend itself to the purpose serving the craft of like the individualized piece. If that makes sense, like it becomes something. It's like a baby, you know?
Yeah.
And you know instinctually, intuitively, like what that baby needs. So you feed that baby. Not for the sake of like, oh, they're gonna love this baby, so I'm gonna do this shit, even though I know this baby doesn't need this.
Yeah.
It messes up the whole pot of soup, you know?
Yeah, okay. So it really is just kind of trying to keep your creative mind in the vacuum of creation as much as you can.
Yes, and serving the purpose of the art, like the individual piece that you're making. It'll speak to you. And making a song too, you'll hear certain things. And you're like, oh, that could be cool. People would really love this. But if it doesn't feel right and it doesn't serve the purpose of the song, then you're just bastardizing the entire product.
You're right. And this is a... sort of exactly what I'm talking about, but sort of not. This is kind of what I'm getting at. Mm-hmm. If you went and sat at a Fiend's practice and you wanted to write a polka song, there's no fucking way you're going to write a Fiend's polka song. It's just not going to happen.
It would happen. I know what you mean.
But I mean, your entire fan base and everything you've built up would be like, what in the holy shit? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay, so when you're painting a picture, do you ever think to yourself, oh man, I couldn't paint a with only black and red and make a vampire right now? You know what I mean? Because if I put it out in the context of all of my other work, it won't serve the purpose. Even if you really felt like painting something all just in black and red for once instead of bright colors.
There's not a real answer, which is crazy. I mean, I like to experiment with a bunch of different things, but like I try to keep like the main focus on like a very uniform kind of style. Like I'm very colorful. Like I love saturated, bright, vibrant colors.
Right.
That's always going to be my thing. But I also love like just the black and white, like the very dark, very simple, very bold. Like this wall behind you is beautiful. It's a perfect color with the blue on it right now. And if, I don't know, like just pop like a huge stroke of hot pink or something on it. Like the simplicity, you know, there's movement and power in the simplicity of colors. Like it doesn't take much. Like that piece I was telling you about the other day, where I was like, oh, it's in the art, it's in the some crazy art gallery for like yada yada millions of dollars, and it's like the one little red dot.
Yeah.
The drama, you know. So there's, I don't know if it would really, I don't know if it would really I don't, there's not an answer, dude. There's really not an answer to that question.
Because your visual art gives you a little bit more latitude. Well, I should say a lot of bit more latitude than mm-hmm. what your music does mm-hmm. just by the nature of the mediums.
Sure.
So I'm wondering, you know, if you ever feel like to yourself, you know, I could paint something really stark and really off-brand, but I'm just not going to because, you know, it's the sort of the theory that fiends can't write a polka song.
I will. Like, I don't give a shit. I'll create whatever I want to create.
There you go. I guess that's the what I'm asking.
But, like, publicizing it and trying to force that as, like, my image, I'm not going to do that, right?
Oh, okay.
Because there's a concise – there's an image to all of it, you know? And if, I mean, it doesn't fucking matter. Like, if one day I wanted to go out and paint black and white vampires, black and red vampires or whatever, yeah. and be like, that's my new thing. Like, yeah. that's my new thing.
yeah.
You know? It doesn't really matter. It's just a matter of, like, how much power you put behind it. And if Fiends wanted to do a polka song, we went crazy and, like, did, like, a System of a Down-inspired record or something. Some people would love it.
Oh, guaranteed. Other people, I'd be one of them.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, I'd be one of them.
There's no pleasing the masses, bro. Especially when you get to a point where, like, you have a catalog of history or, like, stuff you've done for people to reference to. They're always going to have an opinion.
Yeah, well, I guess then that's the operative question. How much do you think about what you are contributing to what you will be?
I stay in the present moment. I don't think about that.
So you don't do R or B?
Fuck no. I stay in today. I stay with what I think about today. I don't think about the future. I mean, I think about the future. You know, I plan for it.
Consider
certain variables. But, like, I don't freak out about it, dude. You know?
Well,
and
you can't.
And you can't. Like, what if in a year I'm painting da-da-da? Then I'll be doing that. Yeah. Like, it is what it is. Like, I'm just going to focus on what I'm focusing on in the moment and find inspiration from the now.
Yeah, and that's really kind of what I'm really digging at. What the creative process is like for you in real time. And you've had some change in the last year.
Yeah. This fits so perfectly in the circle. It's so cool. The bottom of the glass fits in the circle is nice.
Plan that.
I know you did. Sure, probably did.
Sacred G, baby.
Sacred G. What does it look like now? What does the present moment look like now? It's a lot of meditation. Like I said earlier, routine, right? Like finding power and knowing that I can get a good night's sleep and wake up and look forward to my coffee the next day. It's not just like its own individualized day anymore. It's like this steady, here we go. I know. Kind of like the outline of the day, how I'm going to feel. Like I can kind of cater to like unexpected variables. Like if I get I'm not going to say that. But like if I get in like an incident, I was going to say car accident, but I'm not going to say that.
Those don't happen.
But no, they don't. But if something were to happen like that, I'm more in line with being like the water that's running down the stream of a busy river, and there's rocks and shit and debris and massive tree branches are falling in and whatever. The water doesn't mind.
No.
It goes right around it. It doesn't stop at the rock and say, well, what do I do now?
Well, I guess that's there's an adage that's like water can bend around anything but try to stop it.
Yeah.
Because of the, you know, the pressure of water, but it can move around anything.
It's beautiful.
I think one thing I found from people that can express that attitude or that sentiment to me, it seems to be that they've done a fair bit of work to create some underlying peace of mind that allows that. What do you think it is that you've been able to do for yourself, that you've been able to nurture the peace of mind to give you the attitude to say, you know what, if the log falls in the river, I flow around that shit?
A bit of work, bro. Like you said, a bit of work. It's an amalgam of things. I mean, for me, it's diet. I mean, dude, like, I'm a bevy man. Like, I have to have nutrients. Like, I have a very steady routine of, like...
I was going to say, in the last interview, you had a beverage soiree
going
on here.
I got a kombucha, too. I got everything, bro. So, I think it starts with you physically and mentally. Physically, obviously, like, get your exercise, sleep very well,
eat. Do you get up to alarm every day?
It depends. Like if I have shit.
Are you regimented yourself like that?
It depends because I'm allowing in my old age. I'm 20, in my old age of 29 with my back problems.
Yeah. your ripe, seasoned age.
I'm learning, dude, that I need time to recover. Like, I don't need, oh, a half a day to recover. I need, like, 2 days to recover if I'm going to go on, like, a big trip or if I'm going to go and do, like, a tour and I'm not sleeping. Like, I need time to, like, recover. So,
Do you think that that's something new or just something you've become in tune to?
It's something I've known I should have been doing, but it's something that I've kind of finally surrendered to. So for me, again, meditation, diet, accepting that I have zero control over absolutely anything except for myself and letting it go, letting everything else go. Not in an ignorant way. Not ignorance is bliss. You know, but letting it go in the sense that I don't have control over anything. I don't have control over politics. I don't have control over what anybody thinks of anything, what anybody else does. You just got to let it go.
These sound like the tenets of Stoicism. Where did that stuff come into your life and influence you? Or is that something you just garnered from unlikely places?
A bit of both, like the Meditations of Marcus Aurelius is on repeat the past year.
Nice.
But just for listening, just for introspective, you know, listening, I'm not like sitting there like, oh, I got to do this. But just right. Like seeing how it relates to me. And again, being like in tune with myself and realizing that like, oh, I'm at a very mature point in my life, mentally, spiritually, physically, where this is working. I'm leaning more into that, into the more stoic lifestyle, into the more simplicity, you know, minimalist approach to life. It's very, very, very simple.
It's like it's a matter of having your things about you and then be able to put them to use.
Absolutely.
So we got one other thing that we know we've been putting to use, and that's the drumming.
Yeah.
So the last time we talked, we had you in here, and then we had you and James in talking band stuff right after you guys were just getting ready, just finishing the album, just putting the album out, thinking about doing some shows. So talk to me a little bit about the last year in Fiend's world, and then I want to know a little bit about the last year just in straight Brandon's drumming world.
Okay. I don't know how much I can talk about the Fiend stuff, but
yeah. Well, no, tell me what you guys, how the shows have been, yeah. what's been up, you know, catch everybody up a little bit on that. We got to have you guys back in here as the band too, but, your drumming, I think the real reason why I want to make sure we get this on record is, your drumming doesn't slow down. Your visual output doesn't slow down. This is not one pushes out the other. You're doing both.
Yes, sir. Fiend's last year has been really, really good. We've done a lot of like, we're all self doing our own thing, DIY. We bought a van. We have been grinding, just like doing shows, putting shows on by ourselves, you know, getting shows out of state, like pushing the album that we put out last year. It's been doing really, really well.
Insolent Noise.
Yeah. So just staying local, staying semi-local, regional, whatever, and still just kind of promoting that, doing that, grinding. And we're writing now for some stuff coming up that I can't.
And you got vinyls on the way.
Yeah.
There's still some available, right?
Yeah. We got linked up with a dude that printed a bunch of really cool vinyl for us.
Know some of them sold out right away. We'll definitely get a link in the bio of that. You got to snap those up. That record sounds so good. I can't wait to hear it on vinyl.
Fire. Yeah, I'm excited. This came out so sick. So stuff like that. Just keeping it DIY. Still grinding, you know?
So playing shows and writing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So talk to me a little bit about drumming outside of Fiends. As much as you can.
Okay, so yeah, when I can.
Yeah.
So I drum in Cold Steel from Tampa as well. And
Cold Steel is a hardcore band?
Cold Steel is a hardcore thrash crossover band, whatever you want to call it.
Okay.
And we've been steady playing, like multiple shows a month, really, really grinding. Same, kind of in the same wheelhouse as Fiends in terms of like where we're at. Like we're writing a full length right now. We're going to go to Philly to record with Arthur Rizik in September, nice. Which I'm freaking stoked about. We just played last night in Tampa, Cold Steel. We played with a band called Weekend Nachos.
Nice, that's an awesome name.
Do you know, are you familiar?
No, so I'm familiar with Weekend Nachos, but not the band.
Not the band, yeah.
I've had nachos on the weekend several times, all hours of the weekend.
Yeah, all the time. Yeah, I love nachos.
Morning, noon, night, nachos.
Dude, breakfast nachos is crazy.
Hey, I'm not turning them down.
All right, yeah, no shame. But, so they're like an old school, like late 2000s, like 2008, 2009, 2010, like OG power violence band.
Mm-hmm.
And they just came out of retirement to like play a bunch of shows because they wanted to play shows again.
Nice.
And last night was their last run of that tour. And dude, like I get super excited. Like I was saying, like I'm really focused on everything nowadays. So I get really excited about everything because I'm locked in and I'm like very, very present in the moment. But last night, dude, like it was just something for the books. Like the gig, like our set was amazing. It was packed out on a Sunday. Like it was a sold out show.
Love that. That's not an easy thing to do.
No, not at all. On a Sunday in Tampa is crazy. And it was just an insane show. Like all the bands were killer. Our set was killer. Weekend Nacho set was just unforgettable. Like all of the adrenaline and just energy that those guys have and like the crowd brought. It was so cool to see like old heads come out, you know, because like they're Weekend Nachos was like hype, hype, hype when they came out like
right
15. Well, they started in 2004, so 20 years ago. But yeah, like old heads. And then you got like the new kids that are coming in, like they can't even drink a beer and they're in, you know, they're in the show getting crazy, two-stepping and whatnot. So there's a cool crossover between like the modern day hardcore dancing thing.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's like so into two-stepping. And then like the old heads that are just like strictly push moshers or like, you know, hammer fisting kids in the face. But I was just sitting there side stage last night, bro, like watching it in slow motion, you know, like just enjoying it in the moment. And we got a chance to talk to them and it was just cool. It was like generational collide, you know.
What do you see in that? In what parts of what the old heads, which I guess I fall into that camp, bring to the party, how much of that vibe doesn't change? And when you see the younger generation's got their twist on it, but yeah. That's such an interesting community. I'm wondering what you observe in that, how that feels.
Oh, dude. So to be an ex-youngin', you know, because I feel like every 10 years, every decade or whatever, it's like the generational, okay, here's the new wave of kids coming yeah. in. So,
you got a 10-year shelf life.
I feel like I'm on stage two, you know? Like,
yeah.
I'm out of my, like, premature, sceney-weeny kind of guy.
Yeah.
I'm in here, and then, like, Weekend Nachos is, like, above us. So it's cool to see, like, all of these different tiers of generations just become this one beautiful thing. Above all, it's community and value. It's so rich with all of that because they're all there for the same thing, you know?
So how rewarding is that to you personally? And then what parts of that, and I know we touched a little bit on this last time we spoke,
mm-hmm.
but I know that now this flower's opened up a little bit. How much do these types of feelings like you're describing feed the other portions of your creativity, whether or not it's Fiends or painting? What is the symbiotic relationship of you being able to be part of these things and experience them?
Oh man, it's just beautiful. Like it all feeds itself. It all feeds each other. You know, like I was driving home last night, just beaming. Like this is a dream. Like I'm, you know, like I'm living a dream of just this beautiful, massive conglomeration of expressive human beings. I'm just thankful for it. But like, to kind of answer your question, like starting out in the scene, starting out in the music scene 10 plus, you know, like 15 years ago, really for me, and like really getting in, I was very timid, you know, very feeble. Like, I don't know fucking anything. And all these guys are intimidating. They're older and they're scary and I can't talk to them.
Yeah.
I'm a freaking dweeb. I don't know shit. Right. And then I remember going to shows like that and like, I'd get a chance to talk to the guys in the bands or like I get a chance to talk to like the older guys and they're just cool as hell. And it gave me hope and like, oh shit, like I feel welcome. I feel like a part of a community here. And I'm on the other end of that now. Like I get to talk to the younger people that are coming to the show and like be the one to bring, you know, like come back to another show. Like, oh, that was so sick. I saw you hit that crazy two-step. Like you were nuts. That was nuts. Like do more of that. Like be crazy. Like, you know, hype them up. And really to just like fuel the cyclical pattern of energy that is the music scene.
That seems to be more difficult now than it's been. Do you find that?
You think so?
Well, I do in some capacities, yeah. I mean, one of the things that, I guess, talk to me a little about this. One of the things that I'm finding now, and I know you and I were talking about this the other day a little mm-hmm. bit off camera,
mm-hmm.
the more bands and artists that I'm speaking to now seem to have a much better sense of community, like all boats rising with the tide type deal, instead 100%. Of everybody trying to be the biggest boat. And I do see now a more of a camaraderie vibe, a more of a band's not being able afraid to say we serve the song first, or like, you know, you're saying, I'm trying to keep the peace in mind and not necessarily how it's going to reflect me. Okay.
Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about the transition that you've seen in these artistic communities that are bringing more of this vibe.
It's more accessible for everybody involved. Back in the day, it was, for me, my perspective, it was kind of cliquey. It just wasn't as accepting, and I think that's lent itself to like the accessibility of social media and being able to connect with somebody behind a screen instead of like, oh, I'm intimidated, I can't go talk to that guy, like the singer of that band, he's fucking sick, I love him, like I want to say thank you, but like I'm scared shit, I'm gonna shit my pants because I'm a kid and like I can't walk up to him. And now you can just like message him and be like, yo, like love everything you've done, like I love your music, I love your lyrics, like you've changed my life, and have them be able to respond and be like, yo, thank you, that's really tight. And it kind of bridges that gap in like a premature way, like it makes it easier to interact with that person like in real life, I guess, like that. But in terms of like music and starting a band, like anybody and everybody can start a band now, you know? So the scene has become bigger and bigger and bigger with more musicians, more people that are actually into like music and creating instead of just being like a music enjoyer, like a concert goer,
mm-hmm.
you know, somebody that doesn't play, but they love a show or something like that. So it's kind of broadened the scene in the sense that like a lot more people are involved by virtue of playing in bands, or, oh, my boyfriend's in a band, or like, oh, like I play guitar at home kind of thing, you know? So it's made it a little more, I guess, just like intimate.
So I guess this is something I hadn't thought of. So do you think that, or is what you're describing to me that since art in general, but music for certain, has become more accessible to make, it has inherently become more accessible to be a supporter of, since now so many people's 6 degrees of separation to an artist is so much less?
I don't know more about the art scene than I do music, just because I've grown up doing music my whole life, you know, and the art scene is very fresh to me. But from my perspective, the art scene is pretty cutthroat in terms of, like, artists are very, very particular and very, very set. Some of them, not all of them.
Like, right, yeah, of course.
It's a broad statement.
Of course, whatever. Of course.
They're generally pretty particular and very much like, this is my art. It's better than yours, I guess. I get a lot of that. Like, people have talked shit to me. Like, that's just part of the game. Like, people talk shit.
Yeah.
People talk shit. That's what they do. And generally, that's just...
for a whole myriad of reasons.
Generally, just a projection of their own insecurities or whatever, what have you. Jealousy, envy, whatever it may be. It doesn't matter.
Right, doesn't matter. That's the point.
It
doesn't matter.
It's subjective. So, like, I don't give a shit. Like, if you hate it, cool.
Yeah.
At least you looked at it.
Right.
At least it made you feel something.
Right.
Whatever. But I feel like it's... the art scene is very, I don't know. There's really, really, really good stuff about it. Like, there's a lot of amazing supporters, and there's a lot of people that, like, will want to help. But artists themselves, I feel like, are very headstrong, and they're very stuck in their own way, from my perspective.
Well, you almost have to be to some degree, I guess.
To some degree, yes, but not in an ignorant way. You shouldn't go about it in a way that is pretentious.
Well, yeah.
You know,
do you think, and that's sort of a ubiquitous thing, and I guess this is kind of the nature of my question. You used to see, or I found that it was much more common, that you would see artists, regardless of what their discipline was, have that pretension because it was a way to, I feel, a number one, protect their ego or insecurities,
mm-hmm.
but it was also a really good way to present the front of the legitimacy of your art. Of course this is good. I take it really seriously.
Dude,
and of course this is good. I think it's the best thing ever. I like your stuff too, but mine's still the best ever. It seems like a lot of that attitude is starting to erode. And I'm wondering, like I said, do you think that's because so many more, it's just the nature of so many more people are involved now and know people who are involved. Mm-hmm. So now it's much harder to be like, well, my shit doesn't stink because everybody knows it does. And it might be cool because of that.
That attitude is so out the window. No one likes that nowadays, you know. It used to be cool, like back in the 80s, whatever, like on the hype train. Oh, I'm from New York. Like, oh, I have a studio in New York.
Yeah.
Da 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 da. And it's yeah. like, oh, fuck, that guy's legit. Like, he's intimidating. Like, I can't, you know? And now it's just like, okay, you're going to play that card. It's like, okay, then do you. Like, you don't have to come to our party.
Yeah, that's almost become, I don't know the way to put it. It's almost become useless.
It's outdated. Is what it is, the pretentiousness. We're at a time in our lives, we're at a time in culture where inclusivity is the most abundant it's ever been.
Amen. That's why we're keeping this hotel empty.
Yes. Exactly. And it's outdated, bro. You're the black sheep. If you're going to be pretentious, you're going to do that. You're the black sheep, and it's just your...
In the music world, that's really long in the tooth.
It's terrible to see that.
Yeah.
It's cringy.
So what do you think, how do you think we level up from here? Because this has been kind of the thing, this has been kind of the other end of the other side of that sword. Okay, there's definitely more art now, regardless if it's music or visual or performance art or whatever. There's definitely more people who can relate to it or appreciate it or have sympathy to the artist's struggle because their 6 degrees of separation is just one. Okay.
Yeah.
But what this has also done for many artists that we've spoken to is it's created this plateau for them because it seems to be much more difficult to expand beyond your niche. You can get all these people that want to support you and want to be inclusive, but then that tops out at a point.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
you know, how do you become Rick Beato puts out his video and says, you know, who are we going to have play the Super Bowl? Because we won't have any legacy artists. We won't have people that everyone recognizes.
That's cool as shit. I think that's amazing. I don't know, dude. Yeah, like the ceiling, I guess, has been extremely lowered. Like, who's going to be the next Nirvana? Who's going to be the next Slipknot? It's like, that's not what it is anymore.
Well, and even in the art world, it's almost even harder to draw parallels because so many of those people weren't as big as what we're talking about until they were long dead.
And there were 12 of them. Now yeah. There's 12 million of them. Like, it's just not like that anymore. Everybody is so good nowadays, and they're so refined in their craft and their techniques and their approach. That everybody is like Kurt Cobain, or like everybody is like Basquiat, you know?
So how do you feel that you're making growth in your art outside of how it feels for you doing it?
From like a public standpoint?
Yeah. Because I mean, you know, at one point you could say, okay, well, we're doing X, Y, and Z. This is the metric for growth. Yeah. But now the metric for growth, I mean, artists seem to be much more concerned with having a smaller, dedicated fan base because this is now proven to be more lucrative and more rewarding.
Yes.
But there is still the thought of, man, wouldn't it be cool if all 9 billion of us on this rock knew what my painting was?
Oh, yeah. Well, no doubt. I see that on Instagram, bro. Like, I don't scroll Instagram. I don't follow anybody. So, like, I'll see, like, somebody will send me something or it'll just be on like the first little blip or whatever when it pops up,
mm-hmm.
Like suggested for you page or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll see like really cool art. Like somebody will do like a turnaround thing and it's like this really beautiful thing. And it'll have like 500,000 clicks or like 500,000 views and like a bajillion comments. And I go and look at their site and I go, or whatever. And I'll go look at their stuff. I'm like, I feel like they're just not selling these things. Like people, yeah, there's interaction. Yeah, there's like attention and eyeballs and people know and yada, 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 yada. But it's such a one click little, okay, cool. That was cool. On to the next, whatever.
Right.
There's not a lot of like conversion to purchase, to like selling your art or anything. I just had a brain fart. Hold on. It's all these liquids circulating in my brain.
You need a careful balance.
Yeah, I definitely do. I don't know, man. Like, I see all of that. I see, like, everybody, like, on Instagram, you'll see the millions of views and da 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 da. But
is that person happy? Is that person successful in their
That's what I'm saying. How do you quantify the growth?
Yeah.
How, you know what I mean? Like, because painting, not unlike music, you can write songs that feel awesome for you, but, you know, you don't really know if it's going well till you go out to the show and you see some people enjoying it.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah. How do you quantify it for you that your art is you're experiencing growth in your art outside of your skin?
I think it's when I see, personally, when I see, like, I'll see somebody wearing a shirt or, like, I'll see a sticker. I'll be driving in the road and I'll see somebody with a sticker on the back of their car and I'm like, fuck. Like, I want to speed up and see who it is to see if I know them, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, nine times out of ten, like, I won't know who they are. And, like, that is the coolest feeling in the world.
Okay.
And it doesn't take much, bro. I think if you can find gratitude and joy and literally, like, the little things like that, you're successful as hell. But from, like, a social standpoint, from, like, a social metric, I guess, I don't know. It's all personal. Like, it's all relative to the individual.
So as long as you're feeling the growth within your own skin, the rest of it doesn't matter?
In the grand scheme, no. No.
Because in theory, one should take care of the other?
Generally speaking, yeah.
Well, you mentioned one of the magic words.
Say it.
Gratitude.
It's number one.
And I know when we talked last time, it was actually the last calendar year. This year, 2024, is the year of extreme gratitude.
You gosh darn right it is, brother.
We've dubbed it as such, and we've been sharing it with everybody. So talk to me a little bit about how having gratitude come in as a headpin has really changed things for you.
Keeps me centered. It keeps me focused. And it keeps me present, you know? Because it's a very meditative thing, and it's a very conscious thing. You can look, I don't know, you have to be like this, for example. Like, I'm very grateful to have the opportunity to purchase these. Like, I'm okay, you know, like, I'm fine. I'm in air conditioning right now. Like, I'm grateful to have, like, a great conversation with a friend, you know.
Shit, yeah.
It's all of those things. It's a very conscious process. And, like, you just got to be there. You got to be locked in. You got to focus. You got to stay in the present moment to be gratitude. So it's all kind of, like, feeding itself.
So you find that staying in the present moment is a big way for you to keep gratitude in focus.
Yes. Big time. And in relation to happiness, you know, you want to talk about how does meditating and taking care of yourself translate to overall just well-being and happiness? Like, that's a choice you have to make. It's not just, you don't just, this is going to make me happy. This is going to make me happy. No, you have to choose.
Well, and I think you're hitting on a very poignant chord there. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that Jordan Peterson says. He says, happiness is a low resolution goal.
Sure.
It's really joy, maybe is a better word.
Okay.
What brings you on it? Because just like you said, okay, this could make me happy. This could make me happy. But what does that mean?
Dude, it's like we were talking about getting like, oh, we're waiting for this package in the mail. I'm waiting 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever. You get the package, you open the package, it's gone. The excitement and shit, back to square one.
Yes.
So how do you elevate square one? How do you elevate that standard? It's by doing all those things, right?
Well, this is the dopamine burnout cycle that we've gotten in with the watching unboxing videos and things of that nature.
Terrible.
Okay, so then this is the big operative question here, and we'll see if this is the one I'm going to get you out of here fun with, or we're going to painstakingly listen, I'll make up something fun.
Talk to me, dog.
Where is your biggest source of joy right now?
Okay, do you want me to be like legit or do you want me to be like, it's in this bottle right here, right now. Soul tea. But for real, literally.
They better be able to get that sponsorship fired up. This man don't also work for
Buddy
free.
Brew, yo, I'm caffeinated as heck right now. Shout out Buddy Brew, bro. 325 milligrams of caffeine in this mother.
He's your buddy and my buddy.
We are buddies of Buddy Brew. Brother. Present moment. And I find joy in the reassessment, the reevaluation of where did I come from? Where did I come from? How did I build myself up? Not comparing, but kind of comparing, you know, not
taking inventory.
Not like, oh, like that sucked. Like, I was in the shit. I was in the gutter, whatever. Taking inventory, looking back and saying, wow, I made the choices to transcend from this and get out of the mud. And here I am now. Wow, I'm grateful that I'm not there anymore. I'm going to keep doing this to get here.
And that just feeds itself.
Feeds itself, dude. If you keep doing it. And if you're conscious and aware of it, you know.
Well, what do you think the big trick to that is?
Practice. It's a daily thing, minute thing, you know. Focusing on the present moment, like, it's a practice. Meditation is a practice. It's not something that becomes second nature. Because if it becomes second nature, you're not there anymore. It's just whatever. It's automatic.
Okay, so that brings up a good question. Mm-hmm. When you've had a bunch of goals you've set out, artistically, personally, whatever, when you reach those goals,
yeah,
how much of that time can you stand at the top of that mountain and think to yourself, I'm here? Or are you instantly saying, where's the next peak?
Oh my God, bro, half a millisecond.
Yeah, that's what I thought the answer was.
Yeah. As people, as humans, as conscious things that we are, these conscious magic, you know, vessels of meat and blood, like, we're never satisfied. And we're chasing. We're chasing greatness. We're chasing something that's bigger than ourselves. You know, we're trying to look for the answer to these questions that will forever be unanswered. There's no top. There's no plateau. You're just chasing and chasing and chasing and chasing and trying to get to the top, whatever, spiritually, monetarily, you know, socially, whatever. As high as you can go, as high as you can go. But there's no real finish line.
No.
You just keep going. No. And that's a tricky thing to consider, you know? You can look at it from so many different viewpoints, you know? And then from like a nihilistic standpoint, you say, oh, what's the fucking point?
Right.
Why? Why bother? Because there's something on that other side. There's freedom in this life, I think.
Well, this is sort of the impetus of being creative in the first place.
Big time.
Make something where the nothing is, because that reinforces the point that, you know.
You find a lot. You find a lot about yourself. You find out a lot about yourself. You find out a lot about a lot of different things when you create and you get outside of yourself, you know.
And you can't be scared of that. That's, I think, the thing. One of the other things, not only we're keeping the hotel empty for, that's one of the things we're trying to help people through everyone's stories say, you know. Mm-hmm. You got to.
Fear is a mirage, bro.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's a tough one to swallow, though.
Isn't it?
So let's just forget about that because it is a mirage.
It is.
So let's get you out of here on something fun then.
Let's go.
And I know we're living in the moment. I know we're not doing 5-year plans and any of that crap. And I know that I asked you this question last time, but I honestly can't remember what the answer was.
That's good.
So I'm going to be curious if we can A-B these ones.
Okay.
If you could have a project right now, a visual project, a visual arts project, a wall to paint, a building to paint, a something to do, what is it? What's the building? Where's it at? And what are you putting on it?
Oh, geez, bro.
Now that you've got some more skills, you've got some more experience, a lot more experience under the belt, what would be the ultimate fun project if you could do it tomorrow? Clap your hands and we're there.
Bada bing, bada boom. I would say something probably overseas. I want just the biggest wall I can find. Something just huge, like a big spread love or something on like this massive freaking wall that you can see from a mile away.
Like on a freeway, by a freeway something, or something?
Yeah, something. Something where I'm up in a crane. I'm 300 feet up in the air. You know,
we may find a rooftop and a flight path.
Oh my God, bro. Yes. Something ginormous. Yeah, that's what I want.
A mega spread love piece?
Something. Something that will change the world, you know?
Like overnight. Amen.
Something worth the 9 billion, probably 10 billion now people on the planet. Jeez Louise. You ever look at that, the world population counter?
Yeah, we're supposed to, when we hit 10, we're supposed to have a big drop off, but that's one of the ones where I'm hoping Jordan Peterson is wrong, so. Yeah, we'll go 20 bill. There's plenty of room. We'll live underwater, I guess.
I just want to change the world, dog. That's it. I want to do something big enough that will make an impactful statement for everybody on the planet to read and feel.
Well, that doesn't seem like too big of a goal. Brandon, I love you so much, man.
I love you, dude.
I appreciate you coming down. I appreciate you sharing as always. And we need all the humans we can to have a goal like that, man. I love that you're climbing that mountain and the top is just going to be a new top each time.
Yes, sir.
And you and the boys got to come back with Fiends. You got to get the Cold Steel boys in here. And we're going to do a part three with you, but it won't be a year this next time.
It'll be 2 years.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
All right. I love you, part two, brother. Thank you.
I love you, dude.
Thank you, man.
Oh, yeah. Thanks.